Herzlich willkommen zum vorletzten Vortragslot der diesjährigen FrostCon. Wer eine Postgres-Datenbank betreibt, möchte die vielleicht doch backuppen. Deswegen freue ich mich sehr, Mathis Rudolph zu begrüßen, der uns was über PG-Backrest erzählt. Viel Spaß dabei.
Thank you. Oh, I can hear myself. I brought you the topic of backup infrastructure, especially with PG-Backrest, because I personally... I'm very passionate about PG-Backrest myself, and backup infrastructure is one of the most neglected parts of infrastructure, I would suppose, in database operations. Me, myself, I work for Creditive, founded in 1999 in Mönchengladbach. We are in an open source tight community based open source consultant company. We not only do PostgreSQL, we also do a lot of Kubernetes, virtualization, Proxmox, and open source infrastructure in general. Myself, I'm at Creditive for 5 years by now, and I'm in the database team. I'm passionate about PostgreSQL, Linux, high availability especially. And we are here for backup infrastructure. Why does it matter? So, bluntly said, backups are the last line of defense against data loss through security risks, operational risks, hardware failure, for example, or human failure is one of the most causes, I would suppose, that in operation data is lost. So it's a safety net. So what makes a good backup infrastructure? It has to be, first of all, it has to be reliable, it has to be secure, so ransomware attacks or any other attacks shouldn't affect your backups. It should be scalable, it should be easy to operate. That's something I'm always talking about. It should be dead stupid to operate. If you're waking up at 3 a.m. in the morning and you are forced to restore your most precious database, it should be easy. It should be a no-brainer, just one click or two clicks, and it's just a waiting game after this. If you're hopping through burning loops to get your database backup running, you're probably doing something wrong. So, important parts of a backup infrastructure. First of all, storage. Where do I store my backups? So, what media? What location? For example, scheduling. So, how regular? So, you have to choose appropriate frequency. Monitoring is neglected as well. Very hard. So, how do you detect failure of a backup in the process? Or send alerts to get noticed about backups that failed. So, one of the key components of backup infrastructure, which I almost never see, is testing. So, do you have automatic testing or some procedure to test backups sometime? Even sometime testing backups is better than never. And a big part is also retention. Security, so encryption, access control, and is it immutable, your backup? So in general, a good backup is one you can restore when you need it. And the backup infrastructure has to handle scalability. So your database grows with your company, your data grows. Of course, the majority of companies have some sort of policies when they have to throw away data in some sense, but usually they are not thrown away. The data is not thrown away, and it grows and grows and grows. And with the data, also the workload grows often. So it has to be scalable in some sort. It has to manage multiple clusters, instances. So decentralization is so centralized backups is a topic often. I mean, this is also highly dependent on your environment and on your needs. But often it has also to handle hybrid environments, so on-premise and cloud. it has to endure failures of hardware, security has to be a priority, and on the start of the planning of backups and infrastructure around backups is also the definition of the RPO and RTO. RPO stands for recovery point objectives. So how much data loss is acceptable for my operation, for my company? Is it none? Is it a day? Is it a week? So what damage can my company endure in data loss, or what kind of data we can replay? And RTO is the question about how quickly must the system be restored. So are we an online shop, for example? Then we are having no sales, for example, when the database is down. That's critical. So you're not generating revenue in any sense. Or is it okay if the database is away for a night? So that's neglectable. So the goal is always to minimize data loss, RPO, and downtime, RTO. So it always has to be in some sort strategic what you do with backups. So there are some very known and common strategies around backups. For example, for the distribution of backups, the 3-to-1 rule is relatively known, three copies on two media and one offsite. We will go through this later, more precise. And for example, grandfather, father, son, that you keep one remote backup for a year, for example. So not one remote backup, but more remote backups 1 year, and remote backups 1 month, and local backups for 1 week, for example. So there's also a distribution of backups in there. So now that we talked about infrastructure, why it matters, what we need to know about infrastructure, what it has to handle, what it needs to do for us, we need to get something straight about backups with Postgres and pgbackrest. So I go through some basics real quick. Backups with Postgres, in general, we distinguish between logical and physical backups. Logical backups are just plain text SQL statements. You throw them to the database. The database parses them and does something in the database itself. Postgres also has, beside these plain text SQL statements, has this custom format it's just in custom format. There's a table of contents. Then it got compression, for example. It got nice features, but it's not compatible to different SQL standard databases. Physical backups, on the other side, is bluntly set on copy of the data directory. You can do this online or offline. The difference is very simple. Online means the database server is running and you're copying the data directory. Offline means the database server is down and you're copying the data directory. The big downside of the offline backup, of course, is that you have to stop the server. That's often not discussable for a normal operation. So, and there's also the term of point in time recovery in Postgres. So point in time recovery means that we can go through every point in the transaction log of Postgres and restore it to every point. So every point in the transaction log, it's called the write ahead log, val, in Postgres. You need to know that in the background of the Postgres database, there's an archiver process, the so-called archiver process. And this will trigger this so-called archive command, and this archive command will take this will take the transaction log and put it somewhere safe for you, that you can use point-in-time recovery to restore to the point of your desire. So just for the basics of Postgres backups. So what is pgbackrest, for example? So why do we use pgbackrest? Postgres itself got basic tools for backups, for logical backups, physical backups, point-in-time recovery. So it's still complete, right? Not quite. So, it, for example, it lacks retention policies and a lot of or checksums, for example. So, pgbackrest is a backup and restore tool. It does physical online backups. That's why I explained it beforehand. It's useful for point-in-time recovery. It's good scalable. It's got parallelism. It's very flexible in for storage, for example. It's reliable, fast, and it's a simple CLI. So it's easy to use if it's configured right. So it's just one binary. You execute it with the right command, and it does its thing. And it's an interface the majority of people know. It's the command line. And expiration retention is also built in. So it got a lot of features that you know for production ready enterprise solutions for backup. But it's still not a complete solution. You still need to add a lot of things around. Some key terms for pgbackrest to understand the rest of the talk are, first of all, the repository. It's the central location where backups are stored. So if you need to configure a location where backups go, and this is the repository. In this repository, there are two folders, one's backup folder and the archive folder. The backup folders for the backups, the data directory, the archive folders for the transaction log, so the archive. Then we have the stanza, which is just a logical unit for one instance you are backing up. So the stanza is just the database you are trying to back up. So it's not the database in Postgres sense, it's the instance, complete instance. But you will have to name the stanza for every operation unless you put it into an environment variable or something in the background. Then you don't have to mention it anytime, always. But typically the command goes like pgrequest dash dash stanza equals main, for example, backup. If you run it, and backup will be made. Backup types supported by pgbackrest are full, first of all, incremental and differential. The difference between incremental and differential is very simple. The incremental is always based on the last backup, also incremental backups, and the differential is always based on the last full backup. So the differential backup, as far as it goes back from the last full backup, will get bigger and bigger. Backup recovery. In general, it is very fast with pgbackrest. It can backup and restore in parallel. It's very efficient in space and time with these incremental and differential backups. It creates a table of contents about the files in the data directory. So with checksums, it can check against and it verifies also the validity of the files in the backup. Some interesting storage operations or storage storage operations are, first of all, compression is always turned on with pgbackrest. Encryption, you can encrypt your data as you wish with a password. You can create multiple targets, repositories, in one configuration file. You can say repository 1, 2, 3, and if you type backup, it will send this backup to every location. That's important for the later parts. It got support for S3 compatible storage, so you can choose the common big hyperscalers, for example, or the more European and free more compliant cloud vendor, for example, Hetzner, Scaleway, Ionos, whatever you prefer. One big feature of pgbackrest is this Delta restore. You can tell PGBack REST to just restore the files that changed. That's possible because it does these checksums from all files, just holds these checksums against, and just copies the data files that's literally just changed. So restore can be much faster than just copying the whole full last backup if your database is not just completely changed. And I brought you the bare minimum of the configuration for PGBack REST. That's it. You got this global. You got this global section for the repository and global other configuration. I have to say, with PGBack REST is highly opinionated. You can configure everything yourself, but it got a lot of implicit default values. So you're configuring the repo path, so it's just a folder at this point. Then you are configuring the stanza, it's called prod, with the path to the database directory. And that's it. It will implicitly choose the port 5432, for example, and other things. And with this set on your host, you can, for example, set a cron job, or two cron jobs, for example, with PGBack REST for full backup. This one is on Sunday, 2 a.m. with stanza prod, type full backup. Done. This will run. And then for the rest of the week, you can make incremental backups. Yes, PGBack REST itself is very flexible with the choice of backup targets. So it got a lot of options you have to choose. So we are going through some options to get you an overview and the pros and cons about it. So first of all, direct attached storage. You can do backups like this, but it's not very safe. It's very simple, fast. No network dependency, minimal operational effort, but it's lost if the server is lost. So not very safe, and it's not very scalable. So it's not recommended in any way. Maybe as a first stage of your backup, but not as a full backup solution. The same for multiple instances. If you have a replication cluster, for example, same drawbacks, with the addition that you now have to schedule the backup on the right host. So you should just do one backup on one side or not both sides, and waste a lot of space in your storage. I mean, if you have direct attached storage, it's already bound there, but it's also not very recommended. This is more common with Sasan, for example. It's very high performant, easy capacity expansion, reliable storage platform. It's typically an enterprise solution in some sort. So this is a very very common setup. I see that the DB host and VM got block storage from Sasan for the database and for the backup as well, which works. The storage host itself will handle some more error cases, but it's still tied to the database server, and it requires, of course, Sasan administration. But typically, the most operations database operations already has this, so it's the same for multiple instances. It's got the same drawbacks as local storage. So network attached storage. we got some customers who used NFS for their backups and database as well, and we were lucky that we could convince them to not do it, because there were some issues with consistency of files. They didn't had it right set up. The mount point was not the mount options were not right set. So it's so network attached storage is always something is always something you should always use if you really know how to set it up right. For the Postgres database directory itself, you shouldn't use an NFS or network attached storage in this sense. So on the upside, it's a shared central storage. You also can expand it very easily, as it's cost effective and simple deployed. On the downside, if it's not in some sense highly available or redundant, it becomes a central point of failure, and the performance is also very limited in the most cases. So less suitable for large clusters, medium clusters. For small clusters, it's still questionable, but you can argue that it's not a lot of data. The same points apply to multiple instances. The same drawbacks. Yes, you can share a folder, for example, but it's not good practice. I wouldn't recommend it like this. Does somebody do this at this point? Okay, good. I've seen this, but it's was very unstable. Now we get to the more interesting parts. So local storage, local mount points, possible, but not a full solution. Remote backup destinations. PG Backrest supports a few remote backup destinations. So for one, SSH connections, then it has its own TLS server for sending files. And it also supports S3 compatible storage. So, how does it look like? You have your database host, it got its data directory, Postgres service, Postgres database is on this host, and you got your PG Backrest here. It's, of course, not a service, but As an acting unit, I put it into the diagram. So what happens is that Postgres calls PG Backrest as an archive service and sends with SSH the files over to the repository hosts. This setup requires you to allow passwordless SSH, which always ties these hosts together in a security way. So if you break into the backup host, you got the database. If you got the database, you break into the backup host. So there's also security considerations. And if you're using the repository host, for example, for more than one host, or even for more than one different instance, because I just put here in leader and standby, so it's a replication cluster, it's tied together. So there's this dependency of these three hosts, or this domain of damage, this blast radius, for example, is still the same. But if you, for example, have a completely different instance replicating, archiving and backing up to this repository host, if it's shared, you have to make sure that it's on different user with different rights and different paths, so different repositories in this sense. The upside is it's a central repository. Backups from standbys, you can easily schedule backups from standbys. So you can have a scheduler on your repository host, and it will start PG Backrest here. It will go with SSH to these hosts, decide which one he would like to use to do the backup. If you configured it, it will go to the standby, take the backup here, copy it here. So that's something we deploy often for Patroni, for example. So for high availability, so we just put the cluster and an extra host as an archive host with the repository. So it got quite a few upsides, but also downsides. SSH itself is not very fast. The overhead of building, of starting an SSH connection is is not neglectable. So you have to keep this in mind. PGBackRest itself tries to mitigate this by asynchronously archiving. So it got a system to collect write-ahead log into a bigger batch and then start the SSH connection and push it this way. But it also got the risk of more data loss. So you have to keep in mind that this archive is not in sync with the actual database. So if the Postgres database is written, the transaction log is in the storage. It's safe, but it's not archived yet. So there's always the possibility of about maximum 16 MB data loss. So if you're using it asynchronously, this will of course rise. The TLS server, on the other hand, is a bit more sophisticated. It's designed it's simply just a file transfer server with TLS connections. So you have to of course manage lifecycle of certificates. So you still got more complexity there, but it's very high performing. It supports still standby backups. It's excellent for clusters and designed for larger environments. And you can also easier automate them, do the automation easier than with SSH. Do you have questions for this? Because we are going to the next day. Okay. A last remote location you can do your backups to is the object storage. It's my personal favorite. If somebody else is hosting the S3 server for you, it's their issue. So it's not just like no drawbacks, but the drawbacks are somewhere else. The complexity is somewhere else. So it's quite nice to take a service, for example, a public service, and push your backups there. So the upside is you have virtually unlimited scalability. It's cloud native, and you don't need a dedicated backup server for your instances. So your operation, your database operation, can just use existing infrastructure. And if you already got in your company an S3 compliant storage solution in some way, you can just push your backups there. It's that simple. Some drawbacks are, of course, it's network dependent, of course, and it got HTTPS overhead. The same with SSH. But PGBackRest in the newer version implements file bundling. So the issue with these overheads is always that that the archiving is always in a batch of 16 megabytes. So it's always 60 megabytes files, unless you change it. But I do not recommend to do it. it's more complicated. But if you always do an HTTPS connection for every 60 megabyte file, there's a lot of overhead and more communication, and PGBackRest does this very, very gracefully by bundling files, compressing and bundling files. You have to turn it off on, that's a very good feature alone for object storage. Now, some of the more overlooked topics of infrastructure, especially backups. Two weeks ago, a customer of mine sent us a ticket that they wanted to know how much space is on their repository archive server left, so that they have to ask us how much space is on their backup server still available. Tells a lot about them, I guess. So they had no monitoring about this server. So they had no intel about this server. And we found out while watching for the size that there was a backup and retry loop because it failed multiple times since 16th of March. It was 2 weeks ago, so they had 6 months time to see it, but they didn't see it. And the funny part is the backup was fine. It was okay. They had the backup from, I think, 13th March. This was good. And they had the whole transaction log from the 13th of March until now, 4.5 terabytes of transaction logs. So technically, they could take this backup, put it in, and wait the 2 or 3 weeks until it's replayed. So maybe they hit the RPO, the recovery point objective, but most likely not their recovery time objective. So it always comes back to those two metrics, point objective and time objective. That's very important that you have it set for your environment. Yes. What should you monitor? At least you should verify that a backup is done. That's a very good metric. You can track, for example, the status of running backups. If restore operations run, you can verify backup integrity. It's just a command from pre-PDG backrest. It's IO intensive, so it shouldn't run all the time. You should do alerts if a backup is failing, at least as an email, no call or SMS at night for a backup that failed. You should collect some metrics about the size, duration, and retention so you can see if your backup infrastructure is getting to its limits. And you should collect logs for troubleshooting. Some common integrations, for example, are in CheckMK or Singa with CheckPGBackRest or Grafana Prometheus with the PGBackRest exporter. It's an external project. It comes with a dashboard as well. It's quite nice. And you can integrate custom scripts. PGBackRest itself has a lot of debugging information. You can just call info or verify or anything else with PGBackRest. It's just a command you can run. Take some time if they have to read the whole directory, of course. But you can get the output as JSON, and then you can just parse it in your own scripts, Python, Go, whatever you prefer. So there's the possibility to use this API for your own backup solution, even if it's not officially supported. In some sense, it's not officially if you have a third-party project like PGBackRest Exporter, but there is the possibility of integration into your monitoring. That said, this is very comprehensive. Even to know that your backup failed is great. My customer did not know for 6 months, and would be very simple to know, even if they would have monitored the host by itself and seen that the database, that the backup directory got more full over the time. So it got extremely full. So it was 15 terabytes capacity in total, and it was almost by 10 terabytes. So there was not more than halfway there. So over the time of 6 months, they should have known in some sense. And if they have a threshold for alerts, for example, for 80 as a warning and 90 as a critical, they should have gotten a mail by then and seen that something is ill. So always still better than nothing. And one of the most overlooked points of backup infrastructure is testing. So you never know if your backup is okay when you didn't restore it. It's just that simple. It's Schrödinger's backup. If you don't look inside it, you don't know if it's consistent, if it's working. So you should You should schedule restore tests. In the best case, automated. In the worst case, just give out a task every month and test it. See if it still works. Monitoring will catch the majority of issues with the backup, but the guarantee that your backup works and will work in the disaster case for you is always the restore test, nothing else. Yes, so we talked a lot about the what and whys and how, but we and now I want to paint with you a picture of a example of an infrastructure, how it could look like. Here we can we need to get back to the strategies. So we got 3-1. So one copy. Oh, that's all. there should be. The first copy, the PostgreSQL data directory itself counts as the first copy in 3-1. So you always got the one if you got the database. The second should be a local repository in some sense, so it's just not tied to the database server itself. And the third one should be an offsite repository in just not on the same disaster zone or in the next federal state, for example, should be some sort of backup. It does not need to be that regular, but just to be safe that your operation is not completely wiped and your company need to restart in that sense again, because the majority of companies are their data. That's the state of your your company. The data in the databases are literally the state of your operation, of your company. So it's not. It's nothing small we talk about. So there should be some sort of offsite repository. So with SSH, typically not SSH, it's possible, but you shouldn't use the SSH over the internet to make this third copy, the offsite copy. More TLS or S3 is very preferable at this case. You can put it to Hetzner, Backblaze, whatever. Just put a backup somewhere where it... Where it's kept outside your current arrow domain or blast radius. So, as in mockup, I brought you also example configuration. You can just I skipped one here. For example, I brought here an example configuration. For example, we have a repo one with a path to the local repository. And we got an offsite repository to S3, for example. The missing part is the secret and key, and that's it. That's the configuration. It's that simple. This is not a drop-in example, but I hope you get it. It's very simple configured. The next. We first talked about distribution of backups, and now we talk about scheduling, about when to backup. So this is just a recommendation. I never saw this in real life, I have to admit, but I think it's a good start, even if you don't do this grandfather, for example, to keep a local repository with 1 week retention on the remote repositories with 1 month retention is typically enough for the majority of use cases. The cherry on the top is also one year retention remote repository. Could look like something like this. We have repo 1, 7 days, repo 2, 31 days, and repo 3, 365 days. And how could it look like, for example, if we stay with this example, we got, for example, 2 independent instances. I got no replication cluster in this case. You could also add another VM here, replicate there, and it still would look the same. but it just should show of which parts a resilient backup infrastructure could look like. So we got our storage here, a local copy. This could be a SAN, for example. This also would be a SAN. You got your monitoring somewhere watching over all of this, your offsite S3 host and remote repository host. And for example, one restore host where you can schedule a restore test of your backups, and the monitoring host will report if it is alive. So the key takeaways here: if you cannot remember every point I made here, the very important point is that your RPO and RTO do dictate the majority of decisions. So you have to define this for your operation, for your use case. So in general, PGBack REST is very flexible, performant, and easy to use and easy to configure. So I'm personally a very big fan of it. And one point I do want you to remember is that monitoring will catch the majority of issues. Even if you don't do the tests regularly, monitoring your backups will catch the big majority of issues you can have while taking backups. And last, don't forget to test your backups. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mathis, for this interesting talk. We have 15 minutes for questions, so raise your hands. I'll give you the mic.
Yes, and then please.
We go.
So I have three questions.
Yeah.
Question one, I can copy the data directory while Postgres is up and running?
Yes. PGBack REST and the PG base backup tool from Postgres connects to the server via Unix socket or TCP, opens a so-called replication connection, so it's a different protocol from the SQL you would talk to the server, and it can copy files from the data directory over the database server. So it says to the database server, first of all, do a checkpoint, make the data directory, the files in the data directory, set them to the state where they are not half written, so they are inconsistent. And then it will start to copy every file over the Postgres database through this protocol über TCP/IP or the Unix socket to the location where you were running PGBack REST or the PG base backup binary.
So it's more than only a file copy.
Yes, it's more than file copy.
That's okay.
No, it's just file copy. It is a file copy, but it's just a different way to communicate. It's a different protocol.
I use terminal and I say copy from to, and then it's right. No, that's impossible.
That's not. It's building a connection to the server, starting the right copy in, copy out protocol, it's called, and then copying the data out of the data directory. Mm-hmm. That's so getting quite specific, I guess.
Okay. Then the second question, let's play a worst case scenario.
Yeah.
The production host is down.
Yes.
And of course, I have a backup.
Yeah.
And then I had the idea, okay, if I make and produce or build a new production host, perhaps it's easy to install a newer version of Postgres. Is it possible to play? No, it's...
No, the issue is that every major version depends on the binary format in the data directory. If you would have an SQL dump, so a logical backup, that it's very possible that this works. It depends on the extensions and the compatibility of the extensions, for example, you use or something, some other details. But typically you have one major version and you have a binary format for not for every version itself, but they got small differences in the binary format of the data directory. So you can not start the data directory from version 17 with a binary of version 18. And this is something that Postgres is very consistent about. They will. That's also the real reason why you use PG upgrade, for example, to make the to upgrade the data directory for the next version. It will take the old binary format of the data directory and convert it to the new one, so you can use the cluster in the newer version.
Okay, and then third and last question: how do I install PG Backrest, and what's the license?
There's no the license. I think it's MIT. I'm not sure if it's Postgres or MIT, but it's completely free. You can also copy it and do whatever you want with it. There's no license cost in this sense. So it's free software, as in free beer. And sorry, the other part from the question was
the installation. How?
Oh, it's. Almost everywhere in the package managers in the repository is given. For example, in Debian, you can get it from the standard Debian repositories or the Postgres repositories itself. So there are, for example, for the Red Hat family, there are repositories of Postgres, and for the Debian family, there are repositories for packages, for Postgres and PG Backrest, yes. Yeah.
Yes, thanks for the presentation.
So
how do you handle typically major version upgrades then? Do you make a new, do you force a new backup, full backup? And what happens then with the old backups for the old versions?
With PG Backrest, so in this context,
yes.
You have to prepare... yes, you have to do a full backup, yes. It is like this. You also have to tell PG Backrest that there's a new backup incoming, so it has to start the metadata again. So there's an actual command for this. It's up. There's an actual upgrade command for PG Backrest. So when you upgrade your instance, you tell PG Backrest we upgraded with this PG Backrest upgrade stanza command, and then you are forced by PG Backrest to make a new full backup the next.
Okay. And what happens with the old backups then?
They are rotated out. I don't know if it's immediate. I would guess no, because that would be very aggressive. And the retention would be broken at this point. But they will be rotated out with a given retention. Yeah.
Okay, clear. Thank you.
Yes.
You mentioned that there are different ways to do the backup of full or incremental. Is there any way in PG Backrest to do this automatically in a smart way to, in certain intervals, do a full backup and then do an incremental backup in between or something like that? That if I just continuously do incremental backups, I
yes.
don't have the issue that I need all the backups to be able to restore them.
Yeah, that's not a good solution for your backups. That's right. It's this. You just schedule the backup, the full backup, for maybe once a week, and every other week, a day in the week, you just make an incremental backup.
Okay, and then about the installation follow-up question. Then, so if I get it through my package manager, I'm thereby forced if there is this version SKU of zero only allowed to use the same operating system and same operating system version for my backup host as I use for my production host to be able to have the same version to do my backups between them.
I'm not sure if I got the question. Can you repeat it?
You mentioned that on the production host where you do the backup from and the backup host where you so the repository where you where you store your backup.
Oh, you mean the PG Backrest version has to be the same? Yeah,
that the PG Backrest version has to be the same.
Yes.
So if I just install PG Backrest through my normal packet manager for whatever distribution,
yeah.
I then need to have the same operating system with the exact same version for both my production host and my backup host. So there's no possibility to use different systems for that. Or how do I handle upgrades of my operating system and something like that? So do I always have to upgrade them all at once?
Yeah, for example, that would be very tedious. But you can just use the apt postgresql.org repository for Debian example. That will just have the most recent version of PG Backrest and not the version that, for example, Debian 12 also ships with. So you're independent from this. I would recommend just to use the Postgres repositories itself together.
So even though pgbaggrest is a third-party software, it's included in the Postgres repositories?
Yeah, it's the community project, this apt postgresql org repositories. But it's very, very good supported. I know the maintainer, the major contributor with this repository myself. It's I don't know if it's so strongly associated with the PostgreSQL development group. It is actually. It's called the PGDG repositories, the Postgres development group repositories. So it's belonging to the project itself. So it's an official source of packages. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And you can get even very old packages there.
Not really a question, but also keep in mind, if you do remote backups, think about doing it to two different companies. For example, this week there was news that PBS lost their 70 terabyte petabyte archive because the company where they did their remote storage went bankrupt.
Yeah, that's very bad. that's unfortunate. Yeah, but you should still have two remote repositories in some sense. So you, even if the offsite backup of IONOS, Hetzner, whatever fails, burns down in some sense, you still got your locals and you can still choose to go somewhere else with your backups.
Thanks for the presentation.
You're welcome.
About the incremental backup, does it support a block level incremental backup or just file level?
It's block level by default, I think. Okay. I would have to look it up, I think. But it should be block level by default, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, what further questions do you have? There's one. Could you pass the mic?
Yeah, thanks for the talk. Just a quick question. If you have multiple repositories to back up to and you run it like this, like it's on the slide at the moment, is it then immediately like pushing it to all the repositories at once?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
More questions? I have a final one, especially if I do a backup on a remote location like S3, is there a way for me to encrypt the backups? Does pgbaggrest have a built-in encryption
system? Yes, it does. You can set a password and it will encrypt it with an... Don't ask me for the algorithm, but it's state of the art.
Good, thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
So you can just set the backup. You can just put the password for the repo just here. Mm-hmm. Just in the global section, so it's clear text in this point. But then it will be encrypted on the host itself and then sent away.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mathis, for this informational talk.
You're welcome.
A big round of applause for him, and have a great rest of the conference.
Thank you.